true confession, I was going to rework an old sermon for this Sunday. But given the week that was, there was no way I could preach a word I had preached before. So a little different title, To Abide in Love, and a little different text from John. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. Abide in my love, Jesus said to his disciples on the night when they were going to do anything but. Abide in my love, John wrote in his gospel to a community just beginning to gather and grow and bear fruit. Abide in my love. We read on a Sunday that has followed another week of division at home and devastation abroad. How in the world are we as his church to abide in his love? Because we are only a few weeks out from Easter, I need only remind you that the love Jesus speaks of is not a feeling or a sentiment, but an act of complete self-giving without cost or condition to us. The word that instead makes definition this morning is the word abide. You do not hear the Phillies announcer sum up an inning with the words, three hits, one run, and two abiding at base. No more. Of the four definitions that pop up on the right side of my computer, apparently only one is still in use. To abide is to tolerate something, to put up with something. It is a transitive verb, an action that has a direct object. Think for a moment about the things you abide. The conditions you tolerate. We often abide the things we believe we cannot change, especially in those whom we love. And we also sometimes abide the things we can change, especially the things in a society that do not appear to affect us. Moreover, what we abide often depends on where we abide, to use an archaic definition of the word. If your social location includes being black and poor in North Philadelphia, you might say that you abide, tolerate, put up with violence, with racism and injustice, with a broken educational system and lack of access to health care, because you are bowed down and powerless in the face of these things. If your social location includes being white and economically secure in the suburbs, you may live abiding the same things because you can, because you are above the fray and live at a distance from these things. If your social location is somewhere in the middle, as most of us think we are, we abide the current state of the world because we are too busy trying to stay in the middle to do otherwise. Clearly, this is not the definition of abide Jesus had in mind. Yet our lives are defined by this sort of abiding, of tolerating, of putting up with a social order that diminishes us all. What then are the other three definitions? All three are identified as arcane, archaic, ancient, antiquated, outdated. Let's see. To abide in the first archaic definition is to dwell, an intransitive verb, a verb with no object, a verb that expresses a way of being, a verb that sends me back to John's prologue, where he tells us that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. I abide in you. His abiding was his assuming the human condition of us all. All. To abide in him as he abides in us has something to do then with actively taking on the human condition of another. When you drive through North Philadelphia to get from here to there, do you ever find yourselves, for a moment, trying to imagine yourself into the life of the youth on the street corner who ought to be in school? Or the older woman waiting for a bus who may be on her way to work long after she should have laid her burden down? When the light turns red, do you ever stop being yourself and imagine dwelling in one of those dilapidated row homes where real people do their living and their dying? But the light changes. The archaic meaning of abide, however, includes remaining, enduring, staying. Imagine that with the snap of an almighty finger, your white flesh traded places for the rest of your life with the black flesh of the youth on the street corner. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. Around this table, in a very real sense, God's almighty finger does snap, sacramentally, when through Christ's dwelling in us, with us, in the bread and the wine, we dwell in him, and through him we dwell in the humanity of one another. It's what Martin Luther called the miracle of authentic transubstantiation. Not that in this meal the bread and the wine are being changed literally into Christ's body and blood, but that we are, through love, being changed into one another, taking on the life of the other, assuming the burdens of the other, standing in the place of the shame of the other, accepting the other difference of the other as our own. I just have to insert here that on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, I was standing on the corner of Broad and Sansom. I was about to step over, frankly, to have a drink in the Union League Club because I was early and waiting for some friends for dinner. And just before I stepped off, suddenly sirens on the end of Broad Street came roaring. And about 10 police cars came right in front of me, and I was right there. And like I said, at the stoplight in North Philadelphia, I stood there, and I looked in each and every one of those police cars. And I thought to myself, what would it be to be in that car? To be these young men and women, black and white, roaring down Broad Street into they knew not what. What is it for us imaginatively to take on the life of another? And so, whether the other be rich or poor, male or female, leaping or lame, sighted or blind, gay course, at John Calvin, of the community gathered and fed at Christ's table. It is impossible, impossible for us to wound, despise, reject, injure, or in any way offend one of our brothers and sisters, but we at the same time wound, despise, reject, injure, and offend Christ in him or in her. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. The second archaic definition of abide tells us that those who abide are those who await something or someone, who await. We are back to a transitive verb and a verb that is an act that has an object. In the context of John's 15th chapter, those who abide are actively awaiting the gift of God's Spirit. Jesus had just said to the disciples that God will give them another advocate, another helper, capital H, who will be with them forever. That helper, he says, is the Spirit of truth, whom they will know as God's Spirit abides with them. It is the same Spirit of truth that created understanding among an ethnically divided crowd on Pentecost, giving them a sort of mutual understanding that transcended and still transcends the barriers that divide people and destroy community. What would it mean? And what would it matter that a community of faith on Germantown Avenue actively awaited the Spirit of truth and understanding in a society that majors in barely tolerating, putting up with, abiding the other? I imagine active waiting such a spirit, actively waiting such a spirit by creating occasions for divisions to be overcome. Meetings where fear just might be cast out by love. Conversations in which scapegoating and blaming turn into understanding and mutual care. What if we partnered with First Presbyterian Church in Germantown to broker a series of conversations between various neighborhoods in Northwest Philadelphia and the police of the 14th Precinct, awaiting a spirit of understanding actively? What if we initiated an evening where Muslim women in their burqas and Christian women dressed in their leggings could talk about our faith, our identity as women, our experience living in society after 9/11? What if our youth committed themselves to a program called Walking the Walk? A year-long exploration of faith with Muslim and Jewish and Christian youth through the Interfaith Center of Greater Philadelphia. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. Finally, abiding once was understood to be the act of withstanding. Withstanding something, another transitive verb. Poor naked wretches, King Lear cried, that bide the pelting of this pitiless storm. An archaic use of the word, meaning withstand, that bide the pelting of this pitiless storm. How shall your houseless heads remembers her grandfather as a knobby, sour-faced Scot who had given her the first intimation she had of an exile's lament, the pain of separation, and the impossibility of finding one's way back to the place of beginning. At parties in her home, he would lift a finger to a circle of guests, intoning in an impassioned brogue, translated, "What is man? A wind that passes away and cometh not again." Monroe's father would dismiss these outbursts. He believes in things people no longer do. Don't hurt him by arguing, but remember there's no truth in them. Her grandfather died when Monroe was away at college, leaving his essay-prone granddaughter a black notebook. Years later, she picked it up and therein found inscribed one hymn twice, first in his youth, and then on the last unfinished page. Trembling, he had written, "Help of the helpless, O Lord, abide with me." He believed in things people no longer do. He was archaic. "Help of the helpless, O Lord, abide with me." Only 9 words they were, Monroe writes, but placed just before the silence of the book's end, they sank deep into my mind, evoking the thoughts even a young person has of the dark distance into which things are swept. And as life goes on, other deaths and losses add to the store of darkness, so it deepens until the smallest natural happening, a roll of thunder, the edge of a wind lifting the hair, an animal cry in the night, can open the sluiceway behind which awaits one's own death ahead. What then is your only comfort in life and in death? The Heidelberg Catechism asks of us all. What is the only provisional but effective and promising help given you in a difficult situation? Help which becomes good reason, despite the fact that you have serious and even urgent reasons to the contrary, nevertheless to endure, nevertheless to take courage, nevertheless to be joyful. And what is our warrant for that nevertheless by which we withstand, by which we abide seasons such as this? That I belong, answers the Catechism, body and soul, in life and in death, not to myself, but to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ. To abide in his love, my friends, is to be enabled to withstand, to endure, to take